I think that there's even more to come here. I think he has a chance to be a truly dynamic five-tool player. You know, the skills and the tools are all here.
Here we go. It is Hot Sheet on the Baseball America YouTube channel. It is also on the Baseball America podcast page. If you're listening after the fact, come join us sometime live. Usually on Tuesdays. We had Labor Day on Monday being observed, so we kind of pushed back one day, as we're usually 2 days into the week. So 3 o'clock Eastern time, if you want to join us and ask your questions to JJ, Jeff, and many others from the Baseball America family. JJ Cooper and Jeff Ponce from Baseball America here with us right now. So guys, let's jump right into the first move because I'm excited about this one. Fresh top 100. And if you want more on number one, Junior Caminero, there's plenty to digest on the Baseball America YouTube channel or on the podcast page as well. We spoke specifically about Junior Caminero. There he is. So let's slide our attention over to number two on this list, who has been rising, and Baseball America has been all over that story for a while now. Jeff, number two on this list is
Roman Anthony of the Boston Red Sox, now in AAA with the Woo Sox, actually had an opportunity to sit down and chat with Roman a little bit last week for an article on the site, and kind of let him know a little bit early that there's a good chance he could be the number one prospect this offseason in all of baseball, with Junior Caminero very close to potentially graduating.
What else can you tell us? Oh, go ahead, JJ.
I was just going to say, basically, the number two prospect right now is almost kind of like being the vice president, because Caminero's number one, but we also know Caminero's about a week and a couple of days at his current rate of playing time of graduating. And so we really agonized over who was going to be number two. We always do, but even more so than most times, because we knew whoever we're picking at two now is going to be our number one prospect probably heading into the offseason, you know, and that kind of basically put you in pole position. Hey, we're going to report, you know, as much as we can in the off season. We're not saying that Roman Anthony's slammed on going to be our number one prospect going into next year, but it does mean he's going to be our number one prospect, barring a Caminero injury, probably in the next week or so. And, you know, Jeff, the thing that kind of jumped out with that is I don't think when we kind of started this conversation, maybe except for you, that we were starting with thinking about Junior Caminero. There's Jackson Job, there's Chase Dolander, there's Dylan Cruz, there's some other guys. But what was it about Roman Anthony that kind of eventually led us to getting to that point?
Sure, yeah, I think there's a couple things at play. Number one, he just continued to hit throughout the season as the season wore on. Kind of had the opposite start from Marcelo Meyer, who really hit in April and May. Roman Anthony was a little bit slower to get going. You know, April in particular was really tough. And I think sometimes we take for granted some of the cold weather and some of the elements that are up in some of these places where minor league teams are, like Maine. You know, they were kind of playing on and off with their home series the first couple of weeks because they had snow outs. Like, I don't know how many times Roman Anthony's probably even seen snow. But from May 1st on, it's pretty much 300, you know, numbers are around this 400 OBP, you know, above a 500 slug. You know, the strikeouts are at a very manageable number, like in the low 20s, double digit walk rate. And then you look at under the hood, and this is one of the few guys, this is something I kind of made a point of in my article, that has elite power in the minor leagues, that also has a hit tool, you know, that also has average or better contact, average or better swing decisions. His swing decisions happen to be more like 75th to like 80th percentile. It's a guy that's going to get on base. You know, the zone miss is only 17.6% as of today, with a 108.4 mile per hour 90th EV. And oh, by the way, you know, had the hardest hit ball by any Red Sox player in the entire organization so far this season. So I think you put all those elements together, and he's 20 years old in AAA. Defensively, he's played mostly center field. I think most people figure he's going to end up in an outfield corner. This is a guy that's knocking on the door and has sort of that like big three underlying statistics that we look for that I think track pretty well over the last couple of years with our top prospects in terms of guys that do have average or better contact, you know, average or better swing decisions, and really, you know, significant power.
So, JJ, if we see the Red Sox start to make a run with this next great class that is on the way, including Roman Anthony, who we're talking about, do they owe a little nice letter to Chaim Bloom at some point and say, hey, thanks for helping to do what they brought you in to do, at least partially, is to kind of rebuild from the ground up instead of us just going free agent shopping, because we're not into free agent shopping as much as we used to be.
So the 2019 season, we had the Red Sox ranked as our 30th farm system. I would say that they're a slam dunk top three going into next year. Very well could be our number one. We have right now in this update, we have four Red Sox prospects among the top 26 prospects in the game, six prospects in the top 100. And the thing that does jump out about this, the thing that I think is going to be very interesting to watch for 2025 is these guys, the top prospects, they're all knocking on the door. We just talked about Roman Anthony, AAA, Marcelo Meyer, AAA, Christian Campbell, AAA, Kyle Teal, AAA. Well, I'm not saying that all four of those guys are just going to plug into the lineup next year, although it's not crazy to think that that could happen. And the other thing that jumps out about it is Kyle Teal, catcher, Marcelo Meyer, shortstop, Christian Campbell, second baseman, Roman Anthony, as Jeff just said, center field, can play a corner, but if he plays a corner, he's going to be an above average corner. If you put him in left field at Fenway, he's kind of, that's kind of almost beneath him, you know, with how small that field is, except for the, you know, the challenge of playing the monster. So you have this group of pretty much big league ready, or right on the cusp of big league ready prospects who've all performed in the upper levels of the minors, who also on top of that play up the middle positions. Could be interesting to see how the Red Sox handle this, but this is that we only have, we did a story today. There really, we have two other examples in the BA era of the Red Sox having a farm system this highly rated. And those are that kind of 06 to 08 group, which was the Lester, Pedroia, you know, and all those guys, Papelbon and all them. And then you have the 14 to 16 group, which is Bogarts and Betts and Devers and Benintendi, who I know he's kind of tailed off, but was really good early on in his career. And then, by the way, they used Mankata and Kopech to go get Chris Sale, who was the ace of their World Series winning team in 18. So we've seen some Red Sox teams in the past that have been really good like this. But the thing that does stand out is you know, this they don't see it very often. When they do, they've had some success with it.
Yeah, and I think that's you know, partially what this market is. Certainly with Dombrowski, he was aggressive in selling prospects, though to his credit, didn't sell, you know, the best players, the best prospects. I think a lot of the players that he did sell, as you sort of said and alluded to, didn't necessarily pan out to be stars. I think this is a really good core that they have together. There's also players like Luis Peralta, who was a top 100 prospect and a guy that had huge helium and probably would have been one of the top pitching breakouts this year had it not been for his injury back in, you know, early June, and he's on the shelf. But there's a lot of talent throughout this farm system. We haven't even talked about, you know, some of the players that they brought in this most recent draft, which I think was, you know, a little bit more in line with player development. I know I talked to Brian Abraham, their director of player development, this past Friday. And one of the things that he really hammered home was just there's a lot of synergy between, you know, Devin and, you know, Paul Triaboni of their amateur group and their player development. And just in terms of the types of players they're going after. And, you know, I think they're really banging the drum right now for Christian Campbell, just because of the type of development story that it's been for that organization with the bat speed training and some of the other things that they've implemented. So I think, you know, Bloom deserves credit here for this rebuild. I think there's also some credit that goes to just a lot of the current processes and folks that have been there throughout sort of both tenures, whether it was Breslow or Bloom or even prior, that have adapted and really embraced technology and data.
Jackson saying Bloom made one big mistake, Trevor Story. I actually responded already in the chat and I was like, yeah, but it's Boston. I mean, you should be able to take a contract hit like that these days. It wasn't a $300-400 million mistake. I mean, he signed for what? 120 maybe? Something like that.
Yeah, I think it was the length of years that's more the problem now, because you're looking at it and you have some players that could potentially like replace Story in the long term and you're like, or in the short term, and it's like, well, he's still got 3 years left in that contract and maybe an option year as well. So I think it's the years, but the problem is, and I think Theo Epstein, when he kind of talked about it years after he left here, is there's sort of the monster of like the fan base expectations, the TV show and everything that they sell around Fenway and just the whole experience. And they want big name players. I mean, half the fan base right now is complaining that the Red Sox have six top 100 prospects because they should have been traded for pitching at the deadline. Like, you know, you can go through some of the comments and you see like people excited about the future and other people that are like, we want to win right now. And this team's already a disappointment, you know?
Yeah. And that deal, just to be exact, was 6 years, 140 mil for Trevor Story.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. We mean it. We have a college baseball writer opening at Baseball America right now. And where are we posting it? Indeed. Because Indeed makes hiring easy and it gives us great candidates. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, worldwide, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true from even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/baseball. I don't know about you, but I love fall. Fall is a time where the weather just feels perfect from the start of the day to the end. It's a great time for me to get on a bike, take a good long ride where it's nice and crisp, not cold, but crisp. And it's time for new fall traditions, like getting regular hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do. And they've combined their popular peach flavor with the highly requested blackberry to awaken your senses and keep you coming back for more. Liquid IV makes my workouts more enjoyable. It's really easy to prep. I just take my water bottle, fill it with water, some ice, pour in the Liquid IV, stir it up. It's ready to go. It gives me better hydration than I would if I was just using water. It's something that just makes those bike rides even more enjoyable than they were before. Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers energy comparable to 1 to 2 cups of coffee through about 100 milligrams of naturally occurring caffeine. Experience the deliciousness of one of our best-selling flavors, peach, perfectly paired with the highly requested blackberry. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall tradition with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
Okay, so let's stretch it out. Jackson, I'll get to another question from you. And JJ, after you answer this one, feel free to mention anyone else like a Chase Dollander now at the 5 spot in the top 100 that we should keep an eye on before we move on. But Jackson said, okay, how about this Jarlin Susanna, bullpen guy or number 4 starter, top 100 prospect next year, midseason in your mind? Now, just for context, he was part of that Juan Soto trade with the Padres and the Nationals, which just keeps getting better.
I got good news for you, Jackson. Yes, I would say top 100 prospect next year midseason because he's a top 100 prospect right now. He really has taken a big step forward this year. Always has been able to throw really hard. I mean, we're talking 102, 103. But the funny thing about it is I kind of give some analogy here to Hunter Green when Hunter Green was coming up. When Hunter Green was coming through the lower minors, he had the best velo you'd see pretty much on any fastball from a starting pitcher anywhere in pro baseball at the time. He could get a 102, 103. But when he was fastball reliant, it would get hit. But when he kind of developed his secondaries, it made his fastball better. And the secondaries got really good too. And that's what's kind of helped Hunter Green develop to be a well-rounded front of the rotation guy now in the big leagues. Susanna has really developed that breaking ball and the changeup. Doesn't throw the changeup a ton yet, but when you see those, the emergence of those has really helped everything play together. And I do think also, and I kind of want to wonder what Jeff thinks, but I kind of think it makes him more of a guy who now does look like a starter. And by the way, maybe not a 4, maybe a better starter than that, because he has shown some durability. Having 100 plus in the tank whenever you need it is something. But again, now that he's kind of got to become more of a 3-pitch guy, or has the potential to be a 3-pitch guy, I think I say starter now, whereas I would have said reliever coming into this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the development just of control, it's not necessarily command, but he's throwing enough strikes. He's around the zone enough that he's challenging hitters. And it's not just an easy take. The development of the two different fastball shapes, because he does have a 4-seamer and then a 2-seamer, with the velocity that he has, I mean, he legitimately sits 100 miles an hour. I think the exact number is like 99.9. So he's fractions off from sitting triple digits as a starter, has shown that he can get, you know, through the lineup 2 times, which I think is a big part of this, is it's not just him getting outs, but it's him being a little bit more efficient. And the slider is his best pitch. And I think we see this a lot with guys that throw really hard. They also have great sliders, and, you know, the slider sits upper 80s to low 90s. Sometimes in starts, it's sitting 91, 93. And, you know, it's a fastball that takes a left turn. Like, it's just, you don't see that. So the fact that he's able to get the ball in the zone as much as he has, I think really does, you know, sort of lay the groundwork for, you know, him potentially being a starter. I think there's opportunity here. I wouldn't have said that at all coming into the year, but after watching a few starts, he does battle, you know, he can get ground ball outs because of the 2-seamer. So he can be efficient. You know, I think in a lot of ways, it's almost like Louis Gil, where it's just a guy with huge stuff that, you know, needs some time to figure it out.
I like to relate all these topics to the big picture. I can't emphasize this enough. When you are tanking, rebuilding, whatever you want to call it, you need to nail those big trades. Looks like the Nationals really did that with this Juan Soto deal. I mean, there's a million that go the other way. There's way more that go the other way. And I know these aren't comparable players, because Juan Soto was a position player at his age, under control for many years. But you look back to trades like the Tigers shedding Justin Verlander in his prime, Gerrit Cole leaving the Pirates via trade back in his prime, which obviously is pretty much still continuing. And you look back at the return for some of those deals, there ain't much. So guys, this is the other end of the spectrum, where you get this rare quality and quantity that went on with Juan Soto. It's kind of the dream, right? This is one of those frameworks that is going to be looked back on if the Washington Nationals are competitive again starting next year. We'll see. They got to kind of supplement that with some veteran signings. But man, so far, it looks like they have nailed this trade. James Wood, CJ Abrams, Mackenzie Gore, and now we're talking about Susanna. Okay, yeah. Let's move to the top prospect in the New York Yankees system who is getting a lot of attention right now, J.J. Cooper. Jason Dominguez, a.k.a. the Martian, is not up with the New York Yankees for September. September call-ups don't necessarily mean that we're not going to see this player for the rest of the month. So I just wanted to provide some context here for anyone listening or watching right now as to what September call-ups mean, how the PPI picks work now, and why Yankee fans should just be a little bit chill for now and give it time, because I do think if Alex Verdugo doesn't hit for the next couple of weeks, you probably still will see the Martian and he'll be eligible to play in the postseason.
All that's true. But I do think that one thing that we kind of saw a lot of Yankees fans thought was the reason for this was, oh, they're holding him back because the service time, if they hold him back a little longer, then he'll be eligible in 2025 for a prospect performance incentive, PPI pick, if he's rookie of the AL Rookie of the Year. And he's still eligible to be the AL Rookie of the Year in 2025. The bad news is he's not eligible for a PPI pick. This is complicated. This is something that I got to give Matt Eddy on our staff. Loves this stuff as much as anyone. He kind of helps make sure that I'm kind of up to date on this. But the thing that jumps out is being Rookie of the Year eligible is only one of the three things that you have to do to be a PPI eligible. You have to be a top 100 prospect in two of the three lists of BA, ESPN, MLB.com. Okay, Jason Dominguez will check that box. You have to be rookie eligible. You have to be win Rookie of the Year. Jason Dominguez could check that box next year. But there is a third provision, which is you also have to have less than 60 days of MLB service time, which seems weird because there's a service time provision in the Rookie of the Year. But the Rookie of the Year service time provision is 45 days on the active roster. This is 60 days, and there is no active roster component to it. And when Jason Dominguez was coming back from his Tommy John surgery, his elbow injury he had at the end of last year, he was on the MLB 40-man roster and the 60-day IL, the MLB 60-day IL. That means that on those days, you are logging service time, even though you are not logging active service time. So Jason Dominguez has more than 60 days of service time, and that means that next year he will not be PPI eligible.
There you go. Okay, Yankee fans. And if you need to run that back again, that's fine. JJ is smarter than most of us, but you actually nailed that. He was able to do that in like 45 seconds and pretty much sum up why there's no conspiracy theories here. Jason Dominguez is not getting the Yankees an extra pick. Let's get to some fan questions here, which we love during Hot Sheet. Great job from the Baseball America Hot Sheet YouTube chat right now, bringing it. Ref, I know, comes from foul territory, quite frequently watching with us there. And so let's talk about the Knights, the Charlotte Knights playing 90% of their team in MLB as White Sox players. You want to just get a quick line in each of you here on what we're seeing from the Sox right now? Because they're playing some minor league baseball in the majors.
Yeah, I mean, I will say they were bad enough that there's not really much of a difference. I mean, this was a team that's been playing at a world, a record pace, losing record pace all year. But that said, the other thing I do worry about this a little bit is you don't want these young guys to kind of get caught up in this. It's not exactly the clubhouse that you kind of want to be your first big league exposure. To be, the cannon fodder of, oh, we're trying to avoid losing 120 games. And by the way, they're probably going to fail at that. I mean, you look at where they are right now, and the climb to stay at 120, to not finish below, at 39 and 120, three, looks dire at this point, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is among the worst teams of my lifetime, just in terms of performance. And, you have to wonder what's going to happen in the offseason. They didn't do anything at the trade deadline, where at least you'd have some excitement if there were maybe some prospects that you had gotten in return for some of the bigger pieces that they have. It's not wrong to say that this is a AAA caliber club, because I think if you watch enough AAA baseball, you see a lot of lineups like this of just retreads from other teams and, maybe one good young player, two good young players here and there. It wouldn't shock me if you put this team on the field against Worcester for a 6-game series in the International League if Worcester took 4 out of 6.
All right, two more. I'll do one for JJ, and I think the next one's good for Jeff. So JJ, here's from Nola Jeffy. As a Pirates fan, I'm curious to Justin Horwitz's influence prior to coming to Pittsburgh. Can you give some context there?
Sure. I mean, we were just saying all these really nice things about the Red Sox drafts, and that's where Justin Horwitz is coming from. Justin Horwitz has a background with the Red Sox, you know, obviously has a background with the Pirates front office regime because they largely come, a lot of them come from the Red Sox as well. But you look at those drafts, you look at the guys that we're talking about in a lot of cases, and we're talking about players, not that Horowitz was the final decision maker, but he was a very important part of those Red Sox drafts. When we talk about the Marcelo Myers and these guys in these drafts, which the other thing I think that we didn't get to kind of highlight earlier on, that the Red Sox did draft Meyer fourth, right? So that's okay. You took one of the top players in the class with the top pick. That's something. Okay. Congratulations. But like when we talk about a Christian Kemp, Roman Anthony was a way over slot guy, but Roman Anthony was also was a later, you know, was not a a top 50 pick. Christian Campbell was picked 132 last year. And by the way, so fourth supplemental fourth rounder. And on top of that, signed basically at a slot rate. So that's just a truly a found gem and a development success story, like Jeff said as well. But that's kind of the background that you have with Horowitz is a lot of success in Boston.
And then you mentioned Marcelo Meyer. We'll kick this over to you, Jeff. Ryan says, are you concerned about his injuries? I know we've talked about this on past episodes, but just a summary of what your thought process is with him going forward.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some concern. And I wouldn't be shocked if this offseason, you know, if Campbell and Meyer ended up getting flipped just based on some of the feedback I've gotten from scouts and things I've heard, you know, just over the last month or so, it feels like the momentum's kind of shifting that way. And some of it is, you know, Meyer's lack of ability to stay on the field. We haven't seen this guy play, I think, you know, more than 80 games in the season yet. That's certainly a concern when, you know, you're talking about trying to play 160, you know, and I think if you get 140 at this point, just based on his track record, it would be a little bit surprising. So the injuries aren't great. You want to have guys out there. You know, I think one of the most important skills that you can have in baseball is availability. And he hasn't had that. And, you know, you have to wonder with some of the soft tissue injuries and back things, et cetera. You know, there's probably some concerns around the conditioning, especially compared to some of the other guys in the system. You know, and I think, you know, even when we chatted with him, you know, he likes to take time off and rest. And, you know, I sometimes wonder if, you know, ultimately that might lead to, you know, more injuries and just maybe, you know, it's a body that needs more upkeep just generally overall. He is a bigger guy for a shortstop. So we'll see, you know. I think this is still a really, really talented player, just in terms of the pure hit tool and, you know, the power that's there. And it's really easy. He doesn't have to sell out for it. He does have skills as a defender. He's an exciting player. So I do think he's a big part of the future here and is going to be a good MLB player. But I think you certainly have to be concerned at this point if this guy's ever going to be able to play 140 games in the season.
Yeah, I will say this. The sport should be rooting for him to succeed because I've interviewed him, especially recently in Texas and at our prospect pad, and he was awesome. I mean, he was great. Yeah. He can really talk. He does not need media training. I mean, he is a great representative for the sport. So hopefully he gets himself back on track in terms of the durability front. Okay, let's get to another component of the top 100 as we say goodbye. Congratulations to our September graduates. Jackson Holiday, you did it, man. You graduated. So did you. James Wood on the other side here of the graphic, which was very, very well put together by our great producer behind the scenes, Jeremy Meyer. And Max Meyer is on this list as well. So is Spencer Schwellenbach, who's been awesome for Atlanta. Even Cade Povich now exits the top 100. So, JJ, would you like to take the stand and say any final words to our graduates who are now major league ball players and no longer prospects?
It happens so fast. You know, one day you're just remembering, you know, the draft rolling around and you're thinking about a, you know, what a Jackson Holiday is. He's going to go 1-1 or James Wood. And you know, he's at IMG Academy. You're just wondering, okay, are these tools all going to come together? And you turn around and they're big leaguers. They're leaving us. They're not, you know, they're, we're handing them over to foul territory now. And, you know, we'll go on to the next group. But the thing that kind of does make me kind of think about this, and I'll start it with you, Jeff, is if you can pick one of these, especially obviously it's kind of the holiday wood debate. If you can pick one of these players to have for the long term for an organization of these September graduates, who would you take, Jeff?
Yeah, I think it's Wood. And let me just say that Jackson Holiday does not look old enough to graduate from anything, you know, other than maybe middle school. That one threw me for a loop. But I think it's James Wood. You know, the performance has been pretty good. There's going to be some growing pains just overall, I think, with a player like this, but can immediately, you know, put him into any spot in the outfield and you're good defensively. I think, you know, this is a guy that projects to be a 3-4 hitter. He's getting on base. You know, the batting average and contact numbers have not been bad at the major league level. He's hitting for power. I think he had 3 steals in a game the other day. So he kind of brings that, you know, explosive element where it's not just power, it's power and speed and hitting ability. I just think he's such a good athlete. It's going to atrophy a lot later than some of these other guys, like maybe even a Jackson Holiday, who it's a little bit more skill-based. And then, you know, the pitchers that we're talking about here, none of them are Paul Skeens. So I'm not picking either of them to start my organization with. So I think it's easy James Wood for me.
But, okay, if James Wood is our, you know, valedictorian for this, I would say that Spencer Schwellenbach gets the award for, like, the most impressive, like, look how far you've come. Because this was a guy who was a college shortstop. And at the time, you know, you would hear from scouts who really liked his arm, thought there was some potential as a pitcher. But his development as a pitcher, as a guy who really understands the craft, who adds pitches, who sets up hitters, does all those things, is, to be honest, just far as exceeded what I expected. And so, Spencer Schwellenbach, you get an award for, you know, the most improved of these September graduates.
There you go. Okay, so last question here before we jump. Let's include all of the graduates from this year. So that includes Skeens, Jackson Merrill, Jackson Churio. One player, and that includes Holiday Wood, all that. One player that you're going to rely on if you're a GM with your 5 or 7 or 10 year plan. Which player are you keeping and doing the most winning with? Who's going to be the most successful long term out of that group? Jeff, you want to start?
Yeah, I'm going to go boring. It's Paul Skeens. There aren't many pitchers that come right into the major leagues and are dominant right away in the way that Skeens has been dominant. You can make an argument that he's the best pitcher in baseball since he's come up. I think he just, you know, you hang your hat on that. You're going to have an ace. You know, front of rotation guys, even among the best pitching prospects, are so hard to find. You have all the control left. And then on top of it, just the marketability and mystique of Skeens. I think, you know, he's going to sell a lot of jerseys. So I think if you own that team, you're running that team, you want Skeens.
I'll go a different way. I'll go Jackson Churio. I know that Merrill, if you said who's had the better year, I'd probably give Merrill the edge here. And admittedly, Jackson Merrill is not a whole lot older than Jackson Churio. But I do think that Churio, what you've seen in the second half of the season for Churio is kind of, I think actually I did predict before the season, like, look, there's going to be an adjustment period for Churio because he's jumping so quickly. But once he figures it out, watch out. He's hitting over 320 in the second half of the season. I think that there's even more to come here. I think he has a chance to be a truly dynamic 5-tool player. You know, the skills and the tools are all here. He's incredibly young for a big leaguer. He really does probably have another 15 plus years in the big leagues to go. I could see absolutely the Skeens argument. I'll just take the reliability of a position player versus the pitcher.
Yeah, it's crazy. Some of it has to do with the market. Some of it probably has to do with a division race that's been over for a while now with Milwaukee. But also, we talked about Jackson Churio so frequently last year, like JJ, when you joined us on Foul Territory, that he has a slow first 6-ish weeks. And all of a sudden, we're like, all right, moving on. So who else do we have here? Oh, Paul Skeens, that looks good. Here comes James Wood. Oh, you know, like you just move so quickly when a guy doesn't have that instant pop, that instant success, that when you look back and you go, hey, wait, what are his numbers since June 1st? He's been one of the better all-around players in baseball. You forget, he's 20 years old. I mean, he is a budding star right now. And he's going to get a lot of love in that NL Rookie of the Year voting as well. So if you have any choices that differ from ours or any thoughts, drop them in the chat right now. Drop them below this video too. If you're watching after the fact, make sure you check us out on the Baseball America podcast page. Get yourself a Baseball America subscription. Support everything that BA does, working hard year round to give you the top 100 updates and everything else draft wise that we'll get to with Carlos Collazo as we get closer to that next draft. And we already started talking about it. So thank you so much for checking out this version of Hot Sheet. We're back on Tuesday next week, 3 o'clock Eastern Time, live. If you want to ask a question, we'll see you then.